morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. I have a show today that I want to tell you I am so psyched about. It's two people I've always admired, their talent, their wonderful personalities. They're always giving and kind, even old fat ball guys like me. So Corinna May and Alan Barrows, I just... Thank you for coming on the show. And I can't wait to find out about Flight of the Monarch. What an exciting play, you know? And I know kind of, Alan, how you got into it. Corinna, how did you get into it?
I got a phone call from Alan.
Oh, I know that feeling.
Short, you know, short journey.
Yeah. It was really quick. I said, just say yes, and then we're done.
Well, I have to take a moment and say, and please tell David this, all in the whole cast. I saw Abe Lincoln from Illinois. I left there and talked about that on this show till people finally said, we got it. You liked it. You know? What a wonderful presentation it was.
Thank you.
The acting, but also it showed Lincoln not as a textbook person. It showed Lincoln as a human being. And I've shared with David, I am a fan, I don't want to say a scholar of Lincoln, but a fan of Lincoln since I was a kid. Just about read everything that's written about him.
Well, you know, I mean, this is actually a good segue because the thing that I think makes a play work is the writing. I mean, the actors can come in and you know, making theater is a collaboration. The actors are collaborators. They are not simply executors of somebody else's, you know. Right. Like, we don't get the big book of how to play Hamlet. We interpret and we bring our own ideas and imagination and so to it. But when you get a good story,
yeah,
then you can make a good performance out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that play is time tested and yet fresh in 2024. And this play was it originally done, Al, before the pandemic? And now we're doing it in an updated and substantially revised version after the pandemic.
Yeah, so, this is a very different play. I mean, the way he retooled it, Jim first brought it to my attention in 2017. We did a reading of it then, and then he had it produced up at Gloucester Stage. And he was, you know, he said, I was okay. I'd like to have another go at it. And that's when Jim Frangione, who's the artistic director down at Barrington Public Theater.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a friend of mine, and we've done several shows together as actors in different theaters in New England. And so, you know, it seemed like a natural progression. And Corinna and I, you know, we used to get paired up on stage together all the time. It's been 22 years since we were in a show called Jack and Jill together over at the Mount in the Stables Theater. So was a long time coming, and we've just been kind of thrashing about out there. No, excuse me. I've been thrashing about out there. Corinna's been like a, you know, an arrow towards the very specific goal of succeeding in this role. But I, you know, it's interesting you say that thing about Abraham Lincoln and the book on Hamlet. You know, Lincoln was a big Shakespeare fan himself, right? He quoted freely. And, you know, you talk about the personal. I think back, my great-grandfather fought in the Civil War. He was a captain of the Wisconsin Light Cavalry. And, you know, you think back about what those guys were thinking before they picked up arms and made the journey to report to duty based on, you know, their allegiance to what was right and obviously their affinity and, you know, toward Lincoln. So obviously, we were talking about technology earlier, you know, no technology, big delays in communication. He was a man of few words. I don't know how long like the Gettysburg Address is, something like, what is it, like 114 words? You'd know that.
Yeah.
And yet he was able to stir people to action all the way back then. I'm still looking for that book on how to play Hamlet, because when I played Hamlet, I had definitely not found that book. So
wow. Well, and I've told this story before, and I have to say, because you're both trained in Shakespeare, but I had Shakespeare in high school. I wouldn't go to Shakespeare and Company with a gun to my head if I was held hostage in the back of a pickup truck. Then I met a teacher by the name of Kathy Yan. She was also the chairperson of the school committee. She taught advanced placement English and literature, and I didn't have her for a teacher. I was in the other part of the class. She said Shakespeare was never meant to be read like we teach it in high school. It was meant to be acted. So she said, just go down to Shakespeare and Company and see a play. I did. Richard. Mm. Been a fan ever since.
Yeah,
and I tell the story. I have a friend who's vision impaired. He said, when you go to a play, just close your eyes, especially a Shakespearean play. Just close your eyes and listen to the words. It does make a difference. It really does.
Well, there's a way in which the human voice is an extraordinary instrument of engagement. I mean, you have a grandson, new grandson.
Yeah.
That grandson has no language. And yet, when that child makes sound, it pierces right into everybody's soul, because the human voice can convey an enormous amount, just in an unarticulated sound. And so when you go to the theater and you've got these human voices, right, resonating in the space, there's a way in which you receive the story and an immediacy to it that you can't ever get streaming Netflix at home. You just can't. I mean, it's great. I love streaming Netflix at home. I love those stories. I love what they can do. But it's a completely different experience in the live
theater. The live theater is, to me, and you never see the same play twice, even though it's the same title.
That's right.
It just doesn't happen. You can watch Netflix the same, it never changes.
That's right.
But Alan, did you select this with Jim?
Jim and I
program years ago before he was a big shot down there.
Right. He brought it to me, and he's floated other stuff my way, but this, was going to be kind of a co-production, and, I thought we could do that, Jim, but you know, they can get complicated. They get really complex. You know, who's going to pay for what? What are the ticket receipts going? You know, and then everyone is, you know, are we selling enough tickets? Blah blah blah. Really, a boring subject, actually.
Yeah.
But Jim, I just said to Jim, look, let me just you just be the playwright. Just let yourself be the playwright. I'll produce your play. We'll call it a collaboration. He found some people to underwrite it, some, you know, near and dears to him.
Yeah.
And then we went from there. And that way he can, you know, he doesn't have to be worrying about whether, you know, the set is working out or, well, he can from the point of view of the playwright, but not from the point of producing. He doesn't have to produce it. Because generally when I walk into the room, you know, I like to set my producing hat aside, because it's just, you know, it's too much to think about. I got enough to think about wondering whether I'm ever going to remember my lines. So, you know,
I always said two reasons I didn't go into act. Well, three, actually. I have no talent. First, second, that stage right, stage left thing has me all confused.
Me too, and I've been doing it for decades.
And third, I don't remember where I parked the car. So forget lines.
Yeah.
You've been rehearsing. I know you've been really who wants to give us a 30,000 foot overview of the play? What's it about?
Oh,
you go.
Me go.
Oh. Yeah, you go, because you're better at that than I am.
I was going to say the opposite. Judy Braha.
You gotta be ready to jump quickly on these things. Trust me.
Yeah. Judy Braha.
Our director.
You know, it's basically about these two siblings, his brother and his sister, Thomas and Sheila. They're both born and raised on Cape Cod. He spends a lot of time on the water in various fishing boat jobs, either running charters or, scallop dragging or whatever he can pick up. He may be the salt of the earth, but he's also, he's pretty hapless most of the time. And so it's a very funny play. It's what they call a darkly comic play. And it explores how these two siblings, their lives are kind of intertwined. And Sheila has a request that if I talk more about it, I'll give away the plot.
Okay.
That, as they get older and we start thinking about, what's going to happen to us. And so they need each other, and yet they drive each other nuts at the same time. So that's, that's interesting for the audience to watch that unfold. I think it's very relatable for the audience. And they really push each other's buttons. They really, like only brothers and sisters can, you instantly fly off the handle 1 minute, and then they're laughing until they're crying the next minute. So it's, and Corinne and I, we kind of, if we, we've dredged up this old shorthand, so I feel really super comfortable out there. I don't need to get to know Corinna. I know that I'm in good company. And so I feel like it's, even though it's a two-hander, it's a real roller coaster ride, especially because we've been writing, we open day after tomorrow and we're still kind of writing it.
Yeah.
Jim is still writing it.
Yeah, because writing is rewriting.
He's so open to feedback, Jim is. And that is really hard. The old joke, how many playwrights does it take to change a light bulb?
Yeah.
It doesn't need changing. And Jim's quite the opposite. He's been, open to our, as we develop these characters, input on I don't know if I would say it just like that. And then he'll be like, yep, got it. And then he'll take it, what we say, and tweak it according to what his vision is for the play. So you get different inputs and something else, some kind of cheese gets made out of all that.
Can I jump on that, Bill?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm actually, I hate going first because it's easier for me after somebody else has spoken to think my thoughts.
Especially me, when you got to make sense of what's just.
I mean, it helps to know somebody for 30 years.
yeah, I was going to say, you two are not used to working together, so.
Yeah. That one thing that I think Judy said, and I'm not going to quote her exactly accurately, but is that it's a play about how people in a fractured family seek healing. And I think that probably, I don't know what percentage of the audience will be able to immediately relate to, having had a difficulty, dysfunction, in their childhoods.
Yep.
And you can only put that stuff aside for so long. Exactly. And especially because these two siblings are now, in the sort of the last, they're looking at that last part of their lives. And that's the time when a lot of stuff gets heaved up. And you got to deal with it, right? Yeah. There's that. If you see my Zoom thing, go away. So you can go along, and then there's some kind of crisis, and you have to deal with all the things you haven't been dealing with in order to come together and go forward.
Yeah.
And I mean, some families, they just ignore this stuff. until, you know, forever and ever. But there's a real opportunity in this play between these two, sure, to actually do some serious healing and resolution, and come back together as a family. Not that they're not, I mean, there's deep loyalty in this sibling bond, which is, I think ultimately what saves any family is if that deep loyalty and that deep love remains an undercurrent, no matter what, you know, is happening otherwise, that can get you through. And as Al said, you know, they're able to really, they find their sense of humor with each other, however dark it might be in some moments.
Yeah. I read up a little bit on, yeah. Oh yeah, I got it right here, baby. Hey.
No, I'm showing you the poster here because it's really evocative with the fishing boat.
Yeah.
And the knitted cap on the woman's head, you know, Sheila is dealing with a lot right now. And that's for a sibling to be dealing with a lot from the point of view of another sibling.
Yeah.
We'll be there for our friends. Sometimes it's not as easy. I'm the youngest of six, so I've got it easy, right? I'm the youngest. Yeah. I, you know, like, who cares? Half of them can't even remember my name. So, you know, I mean, but to step up for a sibling when a sibling is in trouble,
yeah,
you know, it takes that, it takes that extra step.
And it also means you have to grow, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody goes, and this is the thing of beauty about, you know, writing for the theater is, you know, we ask the question as actors, why is today different than any other day? You're not coming in to see their mundane everyday life. What happens, you know, when the curtain comes up, there is some kind of big seismic shift happening, and everybody now is forced to step up, right? To deal with it. And that means everybody shifts and changes. The other beauty of doing a play is that the characters change from beginning to end, and you get to watch that, that action and that shift and that change and that growth. And maybe you walk out of the theater and think, you know, I really should call my sister.
I grew up I'm the youngest of three in my saintly Irish mother. Nothing comes ahead of family. Nothing. And I mean, that was her preach. Well, I had an older brother, 10 years older, and he was he always was guiding me. That's a kind word. Guiding me and giving me advice, and sometimes solicited, most of the time unsolicited. But then I came home from Vietnam. And I had one of those talks and saying, you know, I appreciate everything you have done. He bought me my first pair of skis. He did all kinds. I appreciate everything you've done. But now I got to kind of fly on my own.
Mm.
And I think initially he was a little set back on that. Mm. But then it all come together. And I mean, that's the one thing. And we have said this a thousand. We're all old now. I mean, they're in their 80s and I'm in my late 70s. So, but we stay in touch. We probably talk two or three times a week. He lives in Florida. My sister lives on the Cape and in Florida in the winter. And I live here in Pittsfield. But you're right. If you can capture all the, what do you call them? Social, emotional dynamics that go on in a family, what a great play.
Mm.
Can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Now,
we thought it would be a little doo-wah ditty, you know what I mean? But it turns out to be kind of it's the full, you get the whole salad bar with this one. So it's, in that way, that was surprising to me because we didn't really schedule a heck of a lot of rehearsal for this.
Well, let me just ask you this, Alan. What is your favorite part of the theater? The director, the producer, the artistic director, Actor, what's your deep love?
You know, it's changed over the years. I've been a artistic director going on 15 years now. So I, you know, producing, putting all, you know, produced over 100 shows in the last 15 years, putting all the pieces together, all the casting, all the hiring, all the finding of venues, all the choosing of venues, putting a whole season together. That is really great. That level of challenge. So I've always appreciated that. Directing is great because you get to see, if you're the right kind of director, you just stay out of the way of a lot of really good actors, and kind of marshal it to, you know, keep it in the guardrails, if you will.
Yeah.
But recently, in the last 2 or 3 years, I've kind of rediscovered this enjoyment that I get out of acting, and that's been a surprise. You know, so that I would have to say right now it's acting. So,
well,
yeah.
You know, to me, Corona, I don't think there's a part you can't play. You convinced me. Well, you played Douglas. Come on. You're a beautiful woman playing a big old fat guy. You know, it'd be like you playing me trying to play you, you know, being a big old fat guy. But no, how did you prepare for that?
For anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because I usually, to me, theater is making art. And this is going to sound reductive, but I think it's true that in a very practical way, making any kind of art is about problem solving. Right? Like if you're writing poetry, it's like, okay, how do I get the poem to come out of all these words? And if you're making a statue, it's like, how do I get this statue to appear out of this block of marble? And if you're doing a character, it's like, there's the problems that the character is facing. There's what parts of the character are like me and what parts of the character are not like me. I had a teacher named Michael Kahn. And he said, look, you look at the character and you look at all the things that are like you, all the things you have in common, right? Which might be your love of music. It might be your sense of humor. It might be that you both grew up in the Midwest, whatever it is. Those are the things you don't really have to work on. Then you look at all the things that are different. Those are the things you have to work on. Those are the things you have to find, figure out, be able to inhabit truthfully. You know, actors get cast in things because because you're right for the role.
Right. And
the Zoom is doing things. And then there's all kinds of reasons why you might be right for a role. And most of the time it doesn't have anything to do with how tall you are unless it's Abe Lincoln, right? It might be your age range. I mean, there's certain things that are called for, but you know, I mean, any number of people can play Hamlet. Shakespeare doesn't say how tall Hamlet is, vaguely how old Hamlet is, but you know, gender-wise, people of all genders have played Hamlet. People of different ages have played Hamlet. People of different heights, different eye color, different skin color, different ethnicity have played Hamlet. And they all find the truth of it. So for me, it's assuming that if somebody's cast me, they see that somehow I'm going to be able to inhabit this role. And then my job is to solve the problems that sometimes seem to me I'm never going to be able to solve. But that's where, you know, having a partner like Alan Burroughs, I mean, stories are on stage are told through relationship. And half my work is going out there and being open and available to my scene partner and letting what they're saying hit me in a way that then the character comes out. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I'll tell you why you just reinforced something for me. I won't say where, but last year, we went to a play where it was obvious to even me that some of the actors didn't care for other actors. And, you know, I, I sat there and I said to the Polish princess, I don't think he likes that guy. She said, what makes you say that? Watch him. Then she said, you're right. He doesn't like him. And you know, you only see that on live theater. Live stage. You won't see it in the movies because they, whatever. But no, it makes
sense. Well, you know, to that point, if you're playing an adversary on stage with someone you know whose acting style you find kind of selfish, it can really fuel a performance, you know, because you know, you don't have to be like, you don't have to say to a friend, hey, I'm sorry I have to talk to you like this, but I'm going after you right now.
And,
but you know, if someone if you feel like someone is kind of a chucklehead anyway, you're like, you know what, I'm gonna dismember you vocally out there and have a good time doing it.
My favorite theater story about a person who was they were bigger in their own eyes than they were in anybody else's. We're doing a live interview, our free interview for this play. This woman comes in and she said, can you tell me how long this interview will be? Well, it was just the way I have to rehearse. And it was just the way she did it. I said, it can be over right now. Of course, the producer and the stars were, no, you know, the director, no, we, you don't worry about it. So I went to the play. This was her entire part. Madam, should I bring in the tea now? You had to rehearse that?
There are no small parts, just small actors.
Small actors.
I have to remember that. I just really want to let the audience. This is Corinna May, Alan Burroughs. They're going to be in The Flight of the Monarch. It starts in 2 days. We'll give all that stuff. We'll give you all the information in a few minutes. They are seasoned actors, and I love them both a lot. And Corinna's husband, I tolerate. No, he's a wonderful guy, but you must get to see these plays. You know, I when I did the talk show, call-in show, never do a call-in show. Believe me, it drives you to drink. I'll give you a story. But anyhow, I was pushing a Shakespearean play. And this guy called up and he said, you know, Bill, my wife, I'm going to blame you for this. And I said, why? My wife is making me take her. I said, well, enjoy it. Just go and enjoy it. He called back about 2 days later. He said, you know what? That was marvelous. I never realized it. Again, I think sometimes people think Shakespeare is more complicated or difficult, or I don't know what the right word is. But we'll go to break right after this. I have to tell you this. This one guy, I had one of the mayors on, and this guy was just nasty, nasty, nasty to mayor. And I have always had this, we can disagree, but we can't be disagreeable. Because I've been on the air. So anyhow, I said, all right, that's it. You got a 30-day hiatus. You just can't call in. Next call. Hey, Bill, how come so-and-so's got to go to Hyannis? So there you go. The mentality of the call-in person.
Hyannis.
We're going to take a break. And I say this, and this is, everybody knows the views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Peter Marchetti in the mayor's office, Peter White in the city council, or the weatherman who's right about once in every 500 or 600 times. This is my flag. I know some of you don't care for it. That's fine. But please don't disrespect it, because a lot of my friends are buried under it. And if you don't believe me, drive to a cemetery this summer, and all underneath all of these flags, someone who at one point put their life, signed on the bottom line to put their life on the line for this country. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. I'm so lucky to have these people, because they are very busy, and they're going to open a show in 2 days, and well, they're still rehearsing. Well, this is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial, simulcasting on PCTV, channel 1301. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right. Are back. I'm here today with two people that I have the greatest admiration for. They are, and this is a compliment, seasoned actors. They've been acting in Alan Burroughs, Corinna May. They've been in the Berkshires, but others all over. They Corinna just finished a play, Abe Lincoln in Illinois. She's now going to be in this play, Flight of the Monarch, with Alan. But the only reason I mentioned the other play was this. She played Douglas, the Douglas who debated Lincoln. Corinna May, that a very beautiful lady there, played Douglas, Alan Douglas. There you go. And she did it.
And this is a totally, the character that Corinna is playing in Flight of the Monarch couldn't be more different than the character that she played in.
Oh, no.
That's true.
Yeah.
Another piece, your director, Judy Braha.
Yeah.
She's got a pretty impressive resume.
She really does. Judy, yeah. I'm from Boston. She used to run a company 35, 40 years ago called the New Ehrlich Theater in the South End in Boston. And she was a professor at Boston University for
30 years almost.
Years. And so she retired from that job and moved out here and is now an artistic associate with Great Barrington Public. I had never worked with her as a director and she's fantastic. She's so specific. She's really patient with me because my irreverence, it comes out in full steam when I'm kind of trying to be an actor that someone is trying to corral. I mean, I'm like every stage manager's worst nightmare. They put us on break and they know that they're going to have to put like an ankle bracelet on me. They can never find me. And Judy is just really been keeping us on task with this show, and she's helping the playwright kind of make sure that the rewrites work, so she's been doing real person's work, amazing work.
You said it earlier in the show, and then I want you to be prepared to give some important info, phone number, box office and stuff like that, and that is I don't want to, I paraphrase, a good director gives guidance, not doesn't corral seasoned actors. I mean, it's different for a kid just starting out or someone just in the business. I mean, I would be intimidated if I were a director to try to direct you two. You've played a lot of roles, a lot of difficult roles. You were a director, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to direct me.
Yeah, me neither. I wouldn't want to direct
me. Just because I kind of find myself,
But we're a lot of fun.
Let me call Judy up and see how much
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this in our, I mean, the thing is that the longer you the more experience I think one has, the more one understands about how everything works, and the more one knows one's own process, and we know what we need. And Alan and I know each other well enough that even when we have opposing ideas about how something should go, we've got a way to work it through, right?
Sure.
And I think, you know, if I mean, you're going to have huge personalities in the room, in the theater. And the point is, we all need to be excited about how we're going to work together, how we're going to negotiate, again, because we're solving problems and we're working on drama and we're working with conflict and we're you know, there's a lot we're dealing with. And you're dealing with, you know, in the storytelling, high emotional moments. And it's our nervous systems that those high emotional moments are coming through. So we have civility and we have manners and we have structure and we have all those things and we know how to behave and not throw furniture or, you know, stupid, ridiculous things like that. But at the same time, you know, it's big personalities that have to be guided. So, you know, a director who comes into the room is like, I am guiding you. I am helping create the circumstances for you to tell the story. And I'm out here saying that moment isn't working. We need to find a way to shift it, right? And we have to trust that those eyes out there are seeing things we can't possibly see and are knowing things we can't possibly know.
Right.
So there's a lot of give and take in the room.
I'm always more interested in what I definitely am always more interested in what Corinna has to say about any given moment than what I'm about to say. You know what I mean? So I'm like, yeah, let me hear what you have to say. And the thing is, there's all these unspoken rules that are developed in the theater, right?
Yeah. Like,
you don't tell your fellow actor what to do on stage or where to move or what, that's the director's job. But, you know, the director doesn't necessarily want to hear from an actor on where the other actor should move so that it works well for, you know, so there's all this like quiet tacit navigation that has to happen. But when you implicitly trust another actor, like I do Corinna, I don't need to worry about any of that because, you know, there's a famous line that was like, you know, like, oh, is he going to do it that way? You know, and you know, feelings can get hurt really quickly if people are out there exposing, you know, their psyche and their soul in the service of telling this story, because, you know, this story kind of starts at 8 and it goes up from there. Right.
Right.
And I mean, 10 being the highest, but pushing it to 11 and 12. So we, you know, you come in the side door and you got to get yourself geared up for that. Like in family situations that you normally are trying to avoid, but because it's theater, you're going right at them. You know, I mean, I know in real life, when I see that my sister is about to pop off, I know that I need to do whatever it takes to keep that from happening, because I do not need that unleashing. It just makes your stomach flip. You know, their family members can really make your stomach flip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you avoid conflict, and on stage, you're actually, you know, sure, often being the play is having you go right into conflict. So you really, I think of this relationship, like relationships I've had with actor, like with Al, it's like we're good dance partners. Do you know? It's like there's a kind of a sense of each other's rhythm and a sense of the give and take and a just, you know, this kind of awareness of each other that we've built over the years, even though I'm, you know, we're meeting each other and we're 20 years more experienced than when we, more than when we started working, but there's still that, you know, we've told so many stories together. We've been husband and wife. We've been boyfriend and girlfriend. We've been, you know, I mean, we've done all these different stories together. So there's a way in which we can sort of step into this dance and go, oh yeah, I know you.
Yeah.
This is different about you. That's interesting. Here's what's different about me, but we still know how to engage in the
to the audience. This is what I mean. These, when I say seasoned actors, in the Berkshires, sometimes we get new people. They're good. I'm not making, listen, I can't do it. That's what, just an aside. What angers me about critics is, oh, can you get up there and do that? Then don't criticize someone who is doing it, because either one, you don't understand it, two, you can't do it. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have gone. But I when I read some of these, I've been to the same play, and even the Polish Princess, we say, were we at the same play as this person?
You know, you talk about seasoned. I definitely, at this stage in my life, have lots of seasoning in there. Probably too much seasoning.
They're like a big jar of McCormick's.
Always use more turmeric, apparently. That's the rabbit hole I've gone down of late. I haven't had any turmeric, but I do get off the floor much more slowly than I ever used to. You know what I mean?
What do you get to be my age?
If I have a chair to reach towards or whatever. But, you know, it's interesting what you say about critics and reviewers, because, you know, there is kind of a tacit understanding that if you're going to make the decision to get out there, then you better be prepared for every, you know, people have come, they've rented a seat. They're paying good money to rent that spot.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of an agreement, like, look, I'm going to give this my best shot.
Yeah.
Critics, sometimes it is true, they come with a certain, they sometimes may have an axe to grind or a knife to sharpen or an agenda to put forward, or maybe they wanted, you know, maybe they're acting out of a desire to kind of tell that story themselves. And that's what you can often read in reviews. You're like, wait a second, this is a book report. This isn't a review.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good analogy. Excellent. That's, you're exactly right. I think the same, it's a book report.
Yeah. You're like, hey, hurry up and get to the part about me, will you? But I actually don't make, I mean, I'll probably regret saying this, but I really don't make a point of reading them. And sometimes now with Google feed, they pop up, right? They pop up in your face. So you're like, oh, I'll just click this. How bad can it be? And then you're like, oh, now I'm going to take all day to shake that little comment, you know? For that reason, I'm like, you know, there's an understanding amongst actors, and certainly amongst the director and the actors, that after opening night, the play is set. It breathes within it. But, you know, I've been out there with actors who are, what would I say, playing their reviews. They'll get a good review and you're like, wow, that's some new stuff you're doing out there. Opened, right? Like, you know, there's a little strut in their step all of a sudden, when actually they should be, you know, crying their stinking eyeballs out. So, you know, there's a whole landscape of stuff we could talk about. A good book to read is The Book of Course Acting. I don't know. Do you have a copy of that anywhere, Karina?
I have it. I have the two volumes of plays.
Yeah, The Book of Course Acting. It's like all those nightmarish situations you get into.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Before we go, can you give us how to get tickets and the box office telephone number and stuff, please?
100%, 100%. We have the original website, shakespeare.org.
Yeah.
www.shakespeare.org. It's a retooled website. Very easy to navigate. Shakespeare.org. And the box office phone number is 413-637-3353. And you will encounter some very friendly people on the phone.
Lovely box office.
I will tell you, and I told Alan this to on air, I think, if definitely to your face, that the people that they have working at their box office, picking up your tickets, working the concession stands, they are absolutely phenomenal. And the other piece I want to say, and this is a hue and cry, to others, your ushers can make or break you.
Mm.
And I'm not going to get into specifics, but I was at a performance very recently where one, the usher didn't know anything, and two, was rude to cover up their ignorance. That's it. All right, let's move on. It's amazing when you go to a place that's well run and the people want to be there. And it just was amazing how wonderful it was. When I went to your performance, there was a person there with a severe handicap, and how the usher took care of that person warmed my heart. Really did. So the play opens when?
It opens, well, our first, the official opening is this Sunday, August.
Okay. Saturday. Preview Saturday, open Sunday.
Yeah, one preview.
Not many performances, so
yeah,
your weekends. Tickets.
Yeah.
Left out.
It's on weekends. It's just Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's all matinees for those of you.
All matinees, which is great.
Want to go home, runs... go have dinner afterwards and talk about the play?
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, it's 3:30 matinees, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's excellent. I mean, there's a, you know, I, like I said, I'm not a kid anymore. You probably didn't notice that. But I don't like to drive back from Lenox or Stockbridge at night. And so matinees are our thing. You've got a big season, Alan. You got plays running right now. Let's put the I got them here. You it's easier for you to find them than me. So
yeah,
you know what they are.
You got, you know, Three Tall Persian Women coming up at the end of the summer. That's a great. There's going to be an amazing play.
I know.
I can't wait for that. People can still catch Comedy of Errors. We've got the Islanders. We've got our play. We've got plays in process coming up, and yeah, we have a lot. We have a lot on the docket, and people can come and you know, they get the full smorgasbord when they come see us. So,
and the other, go. I'm sorry.
No, wait, that's it.
The other thing I want to reinforce for the public and the listeners and the viewers is Shakespeare and Company. When school starts, they pack up and they go to the schools. And I've told this story and told this story, but I think it's worth telling again. I had a young lady, she was graduating. And so I don't know how we got on the topic, but she said, well, I was a wallflower. And I said, oh, what happened? You don't seem like a wallflower to me now. She said, friends of mine coerced me into going into the scenery people, the backstage people for Shakespeare and Company. And then she said, they said I should try out. And I did. Mm-hmm. She said, I think that was her sophomore year or junior year. And then she said, I was in two performances with Shakespeare and Company. And then I went down and competed down in Lenox. And she said, if I hadn't done that, I would still be a wallflower. She said, and I would have never, ever, ever been able to come on this show. So that is a star on your forehead, Mr. Barrows. Your educational outreach touches and changes lives. And I want the general public to know that. It's just not Shakespeare. It's their outreach is phenomenal. And their involvement with kiddos is just terrific. And maybe they'll never be professional actors. But I know a couple, and you know who I'm talking about. A couple of them are in New York right now that they cut their teeth at Shakespeare.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they do great work.
Can I show you this picture?
Sure.
Okay, hang on.
Oh, wow.
That was the last time we worked
together. That was Jack and Jill in 2000.
Wow.
Yeah, 24 years ago.
24 years ago.
Wow.
Play the time to 24 from 22. That's yeah. right.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, but it's obvious you two have, you've worked together, you have a chemistry, you know this, each other's strengths, and you build off them. And that, to me, is what's so important.
Well, one of the things, I've said this before, but one of the proudest moments of my life is when I introduced Corinna and David.
That's right. That's right.
You told me that, yes.
Oh, that's part of our origin story.
Yeah. Corinna still talks to you.
Yes, she does. We both do. No, neither of them talk to me, but they talk to each other plenty.
Oh, good. I have to ask you both, you're both, your spouses are also actors. Mm. We were talking about critics. My wife isn't a critic, but she certainly can point out my shortcomings. And by now, I think she's on volume 43 of my shortcomings. But bottom line, do you ever give hints to each other?
About acting?
Yeah.
That's
no
very,
way.
Very, that's a very,
oh, you never
very,
talk,
very,
you know.
Yeah. If you know. Requested, if
yeah.
requested,
oh. Yeah, you never.
If requested, and look, I'll come home and I'll say to David, honey, there's this moment. It usually, first of all, David is like is brilliant among other things with comedy. So I'll come home and I'll say, can you just help me figure out how to make this bit work? Or what do you think about, you know, so if I come in with something very specific or he does, if there's an invitation, then yes. But otherwise, if it's the thing is, a performance is something that is in process. So I could come in and see something and go, oh, well, what I'm seeing is you're not doing this. And if I say that, that could completely derail his work. When actually, if you just leave them alone, they're going to figure that out. They're going to solve that problem, right? Yeah. Actors are very often, I mean, somebody from the outside can come in and go, well, that doesn't look real to me. And I'm like, that's because I'm in rehearsal. It's and it's in process and it's evolving, but don't derail it now.
Yeah, no, it's really
by saying the wrong thing. So
yeah, that's a fly in the ointment. No, with Tam, yeah. I mean, I've directed Tam before in shows. And so we're working together, that's different. But if I see, you know, if I see a friend or a loved one in a show, all you can say is amazing. You were amazing out there.
Yeah. I think
she is. She is an amazing actor.
Oh yeah. I really, when you see something, a good performance, a strong performance, that to me resonates, especially with us, my wife and I, we will talk about it, you know, just casually say, well, what did you say? And I said, well, you know, here's what I saw. I thought this was great with this and that. And, you know, the more I see live theater, the more I appreciate true talent. I don't know if that, and you know, everybody has to learn. And I really think the people who go into the theater for a lifestyle, I say they are some of the most resilient people I know. Because I spoke with one, and you all know this person off air, or not off air, yeah. And I said, well, he said, the first time I went for an audition, he said, I gave it my all. And the phone never rang.
Mm.
And he said, you know, that really hurt. But he said, I found out that comes with the turf. Because it may not be you. It's just you don't fit this part. It's not you. But think about it. I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, if I went and gave it my all and the phone never rang, I'd call Ellen myself and say, what do you mean you're not going to choose me? It's Macbeth. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a question of combination. There's so many elements that go into, you know, creating a cast and all the pieces together, that it really often has very little to do as to whether people really show up for an audition. There are some people when they walk in the audition room,
yeah,
they blow you away so completely that if you don't have anything from them for that time, you put them squarely on the watch list, right? And if it's not a fit for that play, you're like, yeah, you know, that person has just made them have just earned their spot on the short list of who I'm going to be thinking about.
That's happened to me, actually. I've gotten calls a couple of years down the road from directors who saw me in an audition for something else that I didn't get hired for, but who had been thinking, you know, if a play comes along, when the play comes along. Because it, look, in an audition, and Al will probably testify to this in his way, at least six people are going to walk into the room.
Yeah.
That can do the role, at least. Maybe, depending on who, you know, the role and the people who are auditioning, maybe 20 people are going to walk in who can do it. But then, you know, you are matching them. And also, right, you know, then you have to start going, well, what makes this person more right or less right? And so it's not about who's the most talented, because that's completely subjective. Somebody could cast me in something, I could fall flat on my face. It's not because I'm not talented. It's because that wasn't the right role for me. Right. So, and sometimes you'll see an actor and you'll go, wow, very capable actor, not the right role, or, you know, not the right person they're playing opposite. They're banging up against each other instead of, you know, so there's so much that goes into it. And talent, you know, if yeah, you're on film, you could have 20 bad takes and one excellent take, yeah, and they go with the excellent take and you win an Oscar because, you know, they went with the excellent, because one time you did a great take. And I'm not, nothing against, but it's a different, it's highly subjective, and a career is a long thing. And I appreciate, talking about critics, and I appreciate an audience who goes, wow, this was not that actor's best time out, but I remember them in that, and that, right, and they were amazing. So this was, or maybe it was a bad night. You know, I mean, people come to see it and it's like, well, if you'd seen it 2 weeks later, you'd see a different show.
And that's very, very true. I've gone to previews and I've gone to closings and it's a different show. Folks, I got to thank you very much. Please, folks, listeners, viewers, Flight of the Monarch, matinees on the weekends. This is the summer. Get down to Lenox. I'm going to be with Pignatelli this evening. He has guaranteed me a passport to come to Lenox through Labor Day. So I do want to remind you, 413-637-3353 or www.shakespeare.org. Thank you guys so much. Break a leg. I'm always here for you. You know that.
We love you, Bill. Love you.
And say hi to the old guy for me.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, thank you, guys. A couple of quick announcements. Word by word, they're going to be doing it. And the Taconic Community Foundation is sponsoring it. How cool is that? Mass Cultural. You can. It's at the Mount on August the 4th, 5 p.m. Make sure you. And it's going to be a wonderful event, and you can't get a better place than the Mount. I love the Mount. Berkshire County Historical, the same thing. August 1st, from 3 to 5 p.m. John Dixon inspired, going to be doing a lot of stuff about Herman Melville. You know, he wrote a book. I guess it's fairly popular. I guess, that's what they told me anyhow. And then this one, I just spoke with a lady last night. Please, if you have anyone in this place in life, they call it Memory Cafe in the Berkshires. They hold it the third Wednesday of every month, from 1 to 3 at the Fryo Center. And it's for people with dementia onset, their caregivers. And it's a wonderful, wonderful event. The lady said it helps people navigate what isn't the best time in other people's lives. Mm-hmm. To you, all of my friends, as I said, please just give this a little bit of respect for those who gave their lives for it. And to Corinna and Alan, God bless. You guys are so, you bring so much to this community. And I can't thank you enough. And for the listeners today, make somebody laugh. Do something nice for somebody. There's enough vitriol in the world. Don't be part of it. See you guys. And Alan, if I'm out and if I see Corinna, don't get nervous. I go, hey, it's me, Bill. Don't.
Yeah, okay, great. We'll know it's you. We love you, Bill.
Don't lose your train of thought. Love you guys.
All right.
Take care. Bye bye. Thank you so much. Bye bye. Keep on. Keep on.